And these are for children's services. And I know Catherine was here, but she had an emergency with the situation. And so I told her that she, yes, please go ahead and take care of that. So the first thing would be the formula in the state statute that determines how teachers of the visually impaired, the TVI's caseloads are determined. I want to say it's 6 points currently for a blind student and then 1 point for every other student. And that's not a formula that works anymore, because more times than not, I would say 90-95% of the time, our consumers and our students have severe multiple disabilities, and they're more complicated and more challenging to serve than just the Braille learners. And so it would be a better way to look at that formula and have a formula that would encompass actual service time or whatever that's outlined in the PPT, and what that would look like to determine caseloads, as opposed to just a point system, because we have many consumers that have high needs and that do require a lot of hours and teachers' time, even though they might only be assigned 1 point for their particular needs in this formula. And then the other area is the eligibility criteria for BSBE, because we, OSEP, the Office of Special Education Programs, had flagged Connecticut because our language under ADS and BSBE is unclear on how it compares to IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and the Connecticut State Department of Education. And so they had suggested to us, because once we explained everything, we had to do a written response to OSEP. And once we explained, they had suggested that we might want to consider making those statute changes. However, we have not begun this yet, because I wanted to bring this to the board and stuff to make sure that there was support or any discussion, things to consider before we started any of that. So the likelihood to be able to do anything with this would be 2025. So we have some time, but I just wanted to have it out there on everyone's radar. And then just as a side note, BSBE is working in like in all of our departments on updating our policy manuals, because some of them haven't been updated in many, many years. And so that is a work in progress. It'll probably take at least a year to do that. But we are beginning to do that. So are there any questions for me?
Carol, I just had a comment on the satisfaction survey. The response rate, typical response rates are somewhere around 20%. But since it is generally an older population, maybe not as much for voc rehab, but you know, we still have a lot of people who are older. It might make sense to do a phone survey, because it seems that older people are generally more comfortable with the telephone. And technology is something that skews more toward the younger, I don't want to say audience, because that population is the correct term. So I think it might be worth considering having an all-telephone survey, given the low response rate.
Thank you.
Yes, any questions?
I was
pretty much going to say the same thing. You know, being a dinosaur and stuff like that, but also a lot of times, and this is nothing to do with BSBE per se, I just don't take surveys, because I'll tell you, I get into it and my system just doesn't give me what I need to do to take the survey, or I take it and then I can't send it. So again, you know, technology, as everybody here knows, it's so complicated with regard to people who are blind or visually impaired, because we access our material with so many different ways. that just because it works with JAWS doesn't mean it's going to work with other media. So Al, I just want to concur that with your comment that I think phone surveys need to be the primary means of accomplishing this. My other question is with regard to the calendars. Now, the Lions, for example, have 18 sites to working with people, primarily who have low vision. Theoretically, we shouldn't be working with people who are blind, but I don't know how often that does happen. But my question is, would there be calendars, enough calendars, where a few could be sent to some of these sites working with people who have low vision, who might not even be registered with Busby?
So in order to receive a calendar, a person has to be signed up with Busby and receiving services, because we use state dollars to purchase it. So the client does need to be signed up with us.
Okay. That's good to know, and that's something that we can take up with from the Lions and our services. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Eileen. I just wanted to say, too, that another argument in favor of the phone survey is, I don't know about you, but I think it's fairly typical that we are bombarded with surveys every time we do something, every time we shop online, every time we read a newspaper, what have you. Somebody wants to survey our opinion. So a phone call is also a means of getting people's attention, and I think that would also contribute to a higher success rate.
Hi, it's Mary. I'd like to contribute.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mary.
That. Yeah, I support that initiative, because I think sometimes older people, too, much as I hate to admit this, as one of you already said, there's so many times that people want an electronic response, and after a while, never mind, I don't care, never mind, I'm not going to bother. If someone calls, sometimes, I think there is a small percentage of older people who might resent that or may be afraid of it because they're not sure what their response to how it's going to be considered. But I think for the most part, people would feel like, oh, somebody honestly wants to hear what I have to say. And I think that might be more of a motivational factor in getting them to express an honest opinion.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Carol? All right, hearing none then, let's move on to our next item. We have Bureau Program Updates, Business Enterprises Program. Tyrell, you have the floor.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, everyone. Over the past year, our program, the Business Enterprise Program, we've really been engaged in supporting our business operators with their established facilities, and in addition, the pilot vending opportunity, in which I acknowledged, I believe, on my previous update, which allows the operators to partake in a 12-month trial to create vending routes to earn up to $20,000 to add to their existing business opportunities in which they have as primary opportunities within the program. As to date, operators really have been diligent in positioning themselves to ensure long-term success, such as establishing their transportation needs, establishing a weekly schedule, and also building relationships with the building authorities while, tending to their vending routes. And that's been key. We've found that it's actually been beneficial on both sides. One, to the operator for the additional profitability that they're earning, but also just additional eyes and oversight for the overall vending contract in which we have. So having more eyes out there in the field, per se, we call it, throughout the state ensures that, we're providing maximum customer satisfaction to those to whom we serve. So this has been very, very positive, and we believe going forward that this will likely maintain as permanent opportunity in addition, potentially offer additional opportunity for folks that are not currently within the program. So in addition to that, we're anticipating earnings likely exceeding $20,000. And that's something that I'm working with the Statewide Committee of Blind Vendors to identify should there be a cap or not. And so the committee is having off-site conversations regarding that, and we'll have to resume that conversation into the new year. And so when we talk about going into the new year, I made it pretty clear to the operators, I don't want to call it post-COVID, but when we were coming out of COVID and every operator's opportunity had pretty much tanked, my goal was to try to bring everyone's earnings, existing operators' earnings, back to some normalcy. You know, that was a challenge in itself because the whole world shifted in business operation. But I can confidently say we're definitely on track. Operators are definitely on track of earning what they may have earned pre-COVID, and some are even earning more with different roles and responsibilities, again, now offered post-COVID. So I like what I'm seeing. I'm preparing to submit my federal report in, and just looking at the numbers in comparison, just in comparison to last year's numbers, just the median number has almost tripled. So I like it, and I think we're doing a good job with offering what we can offer, and it's being received well. The goal, my personal goal, is just overseeing the program has always been to kind of get these operators back on their feet and then look to expand the program. And I think going into 2024, the goal is to essentially expand on training opportunity. Over the past few years, you know, we as a program often receive first right of refusals for various operations throughout the state. Many times these opportunities come, unfortunately, last minute, which puts us in a bind to be able to identify candidates. Existing operators in the program, or identify individuals who have a skill set to be able to execute the responsibilities in which has come our way. So with that being said, I've started to have conversations with different organizations, well, one in particular, looking to talk to another one, on their ability to maybe assist our program in offering hands-on food service concession or food service training. Because what I've received in past are several individuals interested in the program but don't have any prior food service experience. It is key that anyone that comes into the program have knowledge of food service. Not necessarily how to, you know, prepare a meal, but just overall business in the food service. General business knowledge and food service business knowledge are two completely different, you know, knowledges. So when I have these conversations with individuals who may have had prior business experience but no food service, I have to tell them all the time, it's great, and I believe you can manage, but you have to understand that it's always high intensity when you're talking about over-the-counter food service operation, and there's major responsibilities following that. And so with that being said, I'm looking to see if I can establish relationships with organizations who have the ability to take on our members or individuals within, you know, the agency who have an interest in the BEP program, to prepare them for hands-on food service training. In addition, our staff will, you know, work with them on the business end. So then when that next opportunity should come, and I'm looking for bigger opportunities, more or less seasonal opportunities, we're prepared to say, yes, we will insert our first right. And then this way it allows me to be able to go to Mary and not, you know, say I have an opportunity, but this person should have the following skill set. But I can now go to Mary and say, you know, this individual who reached out, who took part in such training and so forth, We're looking to call him up as an individual we believe will, you know, be a good fit for the opportunity. And so that's kind of the goal. I think we've identified that it's really a needle in a haystack to anticipate there's that person ready to go for these large opportunities. So we want to prepare them for these opportunities. I have some internal candidates already interested in hands-on training that had no prior food service experience, but willing to potentially take on any, you know, larger opportunity in which it may, if should it come its way. In addition, I know there are individuals in VR who have expressed interest in our program, who have openly admitted and said, you know, your program sounds interesting, however, I don't have this skill set. So let's try to make it happen. And so I've made it very clear to the Statewide Committee of Blind Vendors what my goals were, and building their salaries up, and then following that, now expanding on the program. And that's what I'm looking to do in 2024, is to hopefully be able to expand opportunity in which we'll regrow the program. So we're excited about that. In addition, and some unfortunate news, we had one of our longstanding operators, Glenda Lee Hernandez, pass away abruptly back in October. She operated the Norwalk Community College cafeteria, and so that was definitely a sad moment. She's been with the program probably as long as I've been with the program, so that was tough. We were fortunate enough to have an operator, an existing operator, step in and resume operation. The college is very pleased with this operator, and this operator has already displayed a greater level of offerings and ability to kind of expand on offerings outside of just the cafeteria, more in the catering and so forth. So college is pleased, and we're pleased as well. So that was a good transition. Unfortunate, but it did work to the program's favor. As Carol mentioned, we are one of the programs in which are working on amending our BEP regulations. They are archaic. They have language such as newsstands and gift shops and, you know, things that no longer, as we all know, exist in state government buildings. So we're adjusting that. Some minimal changes, some programmatic changes, but all in all, I think it's fair changes. And so we look to have that information back to the subcommittee of the Statewide Committee of Blind Vendors to review and look to move up the chain of command. So that's good. And as to Carol pointed out, we're probably looking at least a year turnaround time for something like that. But it's been something on our list of things to do for a while. So I'm very pleased that we've actually been able to execute those. So that's good there. Let me see. We also have Camp Net, Micro Market. Camp Net is the National Guard training facility in Nyanic. I think the last time I updated, we were kind of in conversation with the National Guard, and since then we've been able to actually finalize that opportunity. We have an operator in place for that opportunity. Things seem to be going very well there. The camp is pleased. We're offering items outside of the traditional food items, such as, you know, t-shirts and underclothes and so forth, because this is a training facility, so a lot of participants stay over for weekends or for the week. And so, you know, sometimes you tend to forget your required items. So what we did was the operator had direct communication with the guards and asked, you know, for their suppliers, for their, you know, specific color-coded items and gear or what have you. So those items will be sold out of that market, and they're extremely pleased. Business is going well there, and so we're pleased. In other news, other operators in the program have decided to partner with our existing teaming partner for their businesses. So there's been some transitions in business for some of our existing operators, which obviously equivalate to more profitability. We've identified in this day, if you're not partnering, you're really losing out on profitability. Small fish just cannot survive in today's business. Buying costs, merchandise costs, so forth, are just
are extremely high. And so if you are able to negotiate in partnership with someone who can, you know, assist with your business and expand on profitability, in my eyes, that's good business. So that's what's starting to happen. And so overall, I think we're going into 2024 really well. We're committed to the existing operators, but again, also looking to expand on opportunities. So I think we're doing well.
Excellent. National Guard, that's a really good get. Excellent it work, is. Federal.
Yes, it is.
It's funny because you're talking about them having clothing. I remember I went to a conference just before the pandemic, and I found myself roaming the streets of Austin because I'd forgotten to bring my T-shirts along. So I had no undershirts, and I had to look around. I was lucky to find a Joseph A. Bank nearby, and they happen to have something in my size, but I can see that how it would really be handy to have that kind of stuff around, especially for young people, young guardsmen and women. I can certainly see how they can forget stuff, and it's good that they have a place they can go where they can count on things like that. Another thing I wanted to mention is, have you had discussions perhaps with Mary about some form of apprenticeship for people who are seeking to get some food service experience, even though they have business experience, so they'd be better prepared to run a food service operation?
I haven't, but I think the goal is to identify where we can establish this apprenticeship. The problem with our program is in the past, many, many years ago, we used to have a training center. We would utilize I think it was 450 Columbus cafeteria as our training center. But since COVID, we now have essentially seasonal locations, which are, you know, a small window of time, and they're high volume. So it's really difficult to be able to train individuals in that type of environment. And then we have the colleges, which, you know, is Tunkstis Community College, and then you have Norwalk. So it's such a wide spread of area to train. I need to find a location in which we can, you know, have these trainings. Once I identify that, then Mary and I will definitely connect, and then we'll be able to start to establish, future prospects. But that's the goal. That's what I'm looking to do in 2024 is position ourselves for readiness.
Excellent. One more thing, too. I noticed that at the Labor Department, they seem to be switching vendors for the for their supplies. Are you able to offer some insight on that?
Absolutely. So that was one of the points of reference of when I stated some individuals have decided to partner. So in particular, at that location, the operator there has decided better business, essentially. That's what it is. And with that, has decided to partner with Servomation Vending, which will allow for the expansion of items, which will allow for a larger array of fresh food items. In addition, we anticipate a higher profit margin as well. So it's going to be a win-win for both, for you all at DOL and as well as the operators. So, essentially what I've always told operators, you know, your hands aren't the only thing that, you know, requires or makes you an active operator. It's what's up here. It's in the brain. It's business. It's good business. It's communication, because that's key. You know, if you effectively communicate with the building and understand their wants and needs, then that translates into good business and higher profits. So that particular operator has decided to go forward with that, and I think both sides will be pleased immediately. Yes, Alan, you should see some good things in there.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that. Terrific. Any other questions for Tyrell?
Yes, this is Eileen, of course. Let's see. In addition to working with Mary, anybody on the staff working in the area of transitioning students could get involved in this, even to ascertain when talking with transitioning students how many would be interested in food service, even if they've had no experience at all, just to see what the interest level would be among transition age students. That's my comment. And then my question is, what percentage of the BEP program is now operating under the micro market model?
Okay, good question. I'd say about 60% is probably over micro market. Well, again, when you factor in the seasonal locations, I'd say about 60% of our operation is micro market. And again, that's for no other reason than the fact that the population has reduced in the areas in which, you know, once was offered over the counter. What's strange is, I mean, is that, like, when we think about community colleges and, you know, buildings in which have such large populations, we're running micro markets in those locations. And that's, you know, again, by decision based off of, I don't know if it's, we really can't identify if it's just buyers have just, you know, interested parties have just changed their interest of food items. But, I mean, we're in large volume locations because over-the-counter food service operations just aren't warranted. It's just too much of an expense. And to be honest with you, finding employees is still a very difficult task. So we're probably operating around 60%. But my goal is to try to expand on over-counter at the seasonal locations, because those are the locations in which still come up for first right opportunity. They're struggling, but they come up again, like I said, last minute, and we're just not in the position to, you know, be able to accept. And in addition to that, a lot of these municipal locations are charging somewhat exorbitant fees, and so I think those are discussions to be had as well. What could likely be had to favor our program should we have someone that, you know, is identified to be able to take on such responsibility.
No, I understand. And the other day I wanted to have breakfast at a particular well-known restaurant, and the only way I could get breakfast was going drive through, and they made it clear the problem was they couldn't find enough help to open the facility except drive through. So I perfectly understand what you're saying, but I want to commend you program for your forward looking thinking about how to proceed. So congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Eileen. Any other questions for Tyrell? Hearing none, I want to thank you again, Tyrell. Excellent report as always, and the program is certainly in very good hands. And I'm just so glad to see that there is a lot of adaptability in it, and the operators seem to be adapting to a completely new environment. As the pandemic recedes, it's left a lot of uncertainty in its wake, but you seem to have a very good handle on the direction in which things need to go. So very happy about the progress that BEP continues to make.
Thank you.
Okay, so our next item is taking me just a second here to get back to the agenda. There we go. Try that again. One more. Mary. Okay, this one should be it. Yep, that's it. Okay, so Mary, it's your turn. You have the floor.
Okay, so for Voc Rehab, I broke it up into a couple of different categories because a couple of the board members had asked for a list of trainings and for a list of jobs for our clients. So I'll kind of start out with a general overview and then some more updates, and then I'll go into what was asked for the board. So for Voc Rehab, we've hired a four different staff since our last last update. So we hired a VR counselor, Tanzania Agramonte, who is our bilingual counselor. She started in August. She works statewide for anybody who is bilingual and also covers the southern part of the state for a general caseload as well. Part of her job is to do outreach to Hispanic organizations throughout the state and just outreach in general. So, you know, she's hit the ground running, done great. We also, the same day in August, hired a rehab technologist to cover the northern part of the state, the northern half of the state, to complement Christiana. Her name is Elena Carabello, and she, is pretty much, hit the ground running as well, kind of taking over what